Hello, friends. It's Ariel Helwani of The Ringer MMA Show.
I'm Chuck Mindenhall.
And I'm PT Carroll. And together, we are 3-Pack.
Follow and listen to The Ringer MMA feed exclusively on Spotify for all the latest in the world of mixed martial arts.
And join us live on Spotify Green Room after every big event.
See you then. Love yous. Mwah.
This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids' session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Miggy, can't you see? Sometimes your play just hypnotize me. That's what we should have said.
Hi everyone, welcome to Writer's House. I hope you are all safe and well. Today we are going to talk a bit about Black History Month. England versus USA at Wembley. Give flowers to Miguel Amberon. Get a temperature check on Manchester United and chat a bit about the Arsenal Young Guns contracts. And my guest are Mayel Quadri and Mr. Carl Anchorman. Anchorman, it's good to see you back.
Anchorman.
It's good to be back.
It's good to see you back in here. Is everything cool?
First time in the house this season. Nice, this is exciting.
You know what's good?
Really?
And we're face to face. And it's a face-off.
I know.
It's a face-off, Mayel.
Feel the energy.
I haven't seen you, man, in a while.
It's been
long time.
We're good.
To be fair, it's only my second appearance this season as well. So I feel like we're, you know, both working off the injuries, you know.
Mara, I got our own apology. I have shamelessly stolen your, they can hear me laughing in name look.
It's all family. It's not stealing when it's family.
Oh my God.
That's good. Everything going well?
It's going well.
We're gonna what's it called? We're gonna do a little bit of a deep dive with you on Man United and what's going on, because the noise has kind of stopped a bit. So I wanna know what's going on in Manchester. First thing today, guys, I wanna say about the Black History Month. But the people I've been working with for a few years now, Gillette and Football Beyond Borders, it came off of the back of the George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we sat down, we talked together with Gillette people, and we want to do something of real substance, something that's real, something that they can learn, you know, something that they, you know, hit the history, Black history that is not traumatic, you know? So something that they can learn, so they can get positivity from the history, what we're trying to teach them. Now, at the moment, we've got 250 kids in the program. It's called Game Changers. And, you know, in schools, London, like 15, 16 schools in London and Manchester. And we went there the other day. Me and Mayoa went there the other day. And I'm not joking. It was just one of those, you could feel the energy. It was brilliant. Right or wrong?
It was...
You know, listening to the guys speak, listening to those little boys speak. But one of the things what we noticed, though, was the trauma.
100%. 100%. And it's... it shows you why the program is so important, because it's almost like in every single part of your life, that your lived experience as a young Black male, especially within inner city London, you are reminded of trauma. Yeah. You are reminded in the education system of, there were slaves, this, and it's just repetitive, and automatically a lot of these young men, their first experiences of their identity is not black joy, it's black pain.
So
to have something which actually says, well, did you know that there were black Romans? Did you know that black people invented most of the important things that you see today in the world? You can see the difference it makes in them, because they're talking about something positively and it's like, oh, okay. And for me, what was really touching was the reaction of them seeing you as a black hero. Because I was speaking to people and it was like, none of them would have seen you play. Like, none, as great as a footballer, none of them would have seen you play. But they have an affinity to you as a hero because they see you on TV. They see you do stuff in the community. They hear your voice. They see you. And it was like, oh my gosh, like, we're in South London. Ian's from South London. The heroes that we're talking about, this is what it is. And we can speak about happy things. So you even being there and, you know, helping Gillette with the curriculum and everything was such an amazing thing. But to see how they received you, to see how they felt about learning about Black history, for me was beautiful. Because I've been there where every single thing I think about Black identity is negative.
That's what they were saying.
I think about, you know, average Black kid going through school. Think about how early on you're told you can't do something. You can't. And I don't know about you, Mara. I don't know about you. Have you ever had that moment where you realize you're allowed to do something? Like, you know, I've had times where I've stood in a queue for something and I've seen like my white contemporary just go to the front and go flash the pass. And I went, wait, what? I also have the pass. And it's a thing. Right. Okay. Wow. And the sort of having to withdraw and be like extra polite and being extra careful about certain things because there's certain connotations about being a black man and being a black person. And I have a photograph on my phone bookmarked and it's just Ian smiling with Thierry Henry. I shared it on my Instagram once and, you know, a couple of my boys were like, oh, this photo's so good. I can't really articulate why it's so good. And I went, in the nicest way, Ian, sorry, because they're old and they're smiling. And we're supposed to be able to grow old. There are too many times when we talk about black trauma and whatnot. We think about the black people that aren't here with us, that didn't get to do certain things. You know, you think about how many times as a black person, when you're happy, you can't quite be too happy. I was reading a really interesting thing about why do black people run when they laugh? And, you know, we're all smiling because we all have the experience where we find something really funny and you run away. And apparently it's got history in slavery. So we had cracker barrels. If you were a slave and you were seen to be laughing, you could get in trouble for it. So very often when black slaves on the plantation were laughing, they would run to a barrel, throw their head in the barrel and laugh in there, bring their head up, and then no one would know where they're laughing. And it's that sort of, I didn't even know that. But I've watched so much black media and seen so many black people when we run, when we laugh, and we don't know. Even our happiest moments somehow go back to our trauma. And just to have that thing of, I mean, what you're telling me right there is that moment where a young black boy has the light bulb going, wait, I can be whatever I want.
I don't have to relive trauma. Or ultimately, when I'm speaking about my identity, yes, it's important to know the history of how we're here, but there's so much more to the history that we've been fed for so long. Like, I remember when the program started and spoke to Ray about it, and I just remember like the smile on his face is like, yeah, FBB, Gillette, we've done this thing. And he's like, my word, there was black Roman. And I was like, wait, what? And I remember his joy, like, this is someone that's not even doing the program, being like, yes, there's black Romans, like, it's amazing. And then
so wait, what?
It's that moment.
Exactly.
And like, we're there with the kids and, you know, the practitioners, they're doing a great job speaking to them about, okay, so what were some of the things you learned? And these kids are just smiling, telling about all of these positive moments and how it, not just about the positive moments in history, but how it made them feel. And that's the important thing for me. It's not just
the shock of what that really happened.
And it's beautiful. Honestly, it's beautiful. And you just hope that, you know, so ultimately, like you said, 250 kids. My hope is that more than 250 kids can have that feeling, because the reality is not everyone gets to feel that joy. And it's really saddening.
This is why it's important. And I mentioned it at the top about eating off the top. This is why when you get a business, like a company like a Gillette that come in, they can't stay for 5 minutes. They have to stay. They owe it to these kids. Like 250 kids. Yes, it's brilliant from where it started, but it's nowhere near what we need to do. It's nowhere near, and this is why you need the Gillettes of this world for the long term. Mm-hmm. And this is why you won't see me rolled out everywhere doing stuff. If you see me start, it will be the brands that I work with continually, because those are the ones that back you. Those are the ones that are, like, I've said to them, listen, this is something we've got to do. It's not 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? 2 years, we've got 250 kids. Of course, I want to see, I want it to be 250,000, 2.5 million. I want them all to know, because like everybody can get those feelings of, wow, you know? Because when you speak, one of the kids, remember one of the kids said, remember Mayowa, why is it only a month?
Mm.
I said, listen, man, that's what we got to take. They're giving us a month, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that you have a month. You've got all year. You've got 100%. 10 years. Just keep talking. And what you're learning, can you imagine if you go and you're speaking to people about the Black Roman, Septimus Severus, the Black Roman, you know, speak to them. When you speak to them about that and they say, wow, what did he do? Then you go and tell them what he does. And then all of a sudden you're teaching something mm-hmm. else that is positive.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like you don't have to just do it just for a month. You do it for as long as you want. They've just put, there's a month there and it's called Black History Month. Fine. Yeah, brilliant. But I'm going to do this all the time. And anytime I can speak to somebody and enlighten them about Black history, mm-hmm. positive Black history, I'm going to do it. And that is what it came down to. And then, you know, to see them, and you know what was really nice as well is seeing them trying to articulate themselves and speak and talk about this stuff. When deep down, a lot of the talk was like quite traumatic about the stuff that's happened.
Mm.
And that is why we spoke about it for a bit, but then you'd kind of turn it to the positive side, because yes, we can't ignore the fuck that stuff.
Mm.
This is why people are taking the knee. This is why Colin Kaepernick lost his career.
Mm-hmm.
Because people, you have to stand, this is what's happened to us. George Floyd, that's what started this.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't ignore it. Mm. And that's what you tried to say. Oh, here we go again. No, it's not here we go again. That's happened. They want to speak about it.
However,
mm-hmm. this is happening. Mm. That has happened as well. Mm. And that is what you can see where I can build off of that.
Yep. 100%.
You know? 100%. So this, like I say, it's something that I'm very proud of, but like I will never sleep. I won't sleep properly until the numbers are way, way up. And this is why, as much as people mention, I mentioned Gillette, I have to mention, because it's people like that what's going to help. They're helping. That's an ally. Mm-hmm. That's an ally right there.
It was beautiful. It was a really, really good day. Seeing the smile on their faces as well, playing football with mm-hmm. Righty.
But the thing is, and
the reaction to that touch as well.
And the thing about it is, Carl, you know, I know they haven't seen me play, but then I just had to do
this. I wish I was there.
One of them.
I wish I was there.
One of the guys, like, because they were flexing.
Yeah, they were flexing.
They were trying to get me in the rondo. They're trying to get me, but I never gave the ball away in the rondo. Mm-hmm. And then when we played the game, they were saying things like, yes, score against Ian Wright, score against. And then one of the guys rushed in on me, man. And I flicked it up and then just passed it. And they went, wow. It was
the laughing
funny.
Thing. Everyone laughed and ran away.
Exactly what happened. Everyone laughed and ran away.
Joy. Unrestrained joy. Honestly, when the joy is so much in your soul that your body can't handle it, so you have to run.
Can I just quickly just give flowers to football? Because it's through football that you're able, I'm reaching them.
Yep.
I'm teaching them through football. And again, once again, football's just flowers football. You're getting flowers. I just want to just flash back quickly to the England-USA game on Friday. What a great game. You know, in a game like that was never friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Name only, Mayowa.
Yep.
Name only,
Carl. Simply because when I was watching, I was thinking, so much on the line. England have to show the USA, because USA is always the bar. No matter what you do in Europe, you have to make sure at some stage you come up against USA and you let them know. But if I'm going to be totally honest, I thought that the offside from Sophia Smith was very, very harsh. People say, what are you talking about? Offside's offside. Mm. From where it was and the run she made, with the there's no advantage. No one's going to tell me, you know, no one's going to say to me, yeah, well, it's gone really minute now. The margins are small, yes. But where the ball's coming from, the run she made, then she made a 3-4 yard run inside to go long.
Mm.
But that's a whole different story. But the way that USA side came over and played without a real progressive, creative midfielder, and then they just scored at will in certain... You know when a team's playing, and then the opposing team scores, and then bam, they just score. It's like, wow. It's just like, oh my gosh, they're so good.
Do you know what got me though?
Go on.
England don't play like an England team. Like, you look at the patterns of play, the triangles, the mm-hmm. quick passes into the channel. I was like, Serena has completely transformed this team.
Mm.
Lucy Bronze looks... like someone possessed.
I read something the other day. Someone said that she wouldn't play past 27. She kind of brought the quote back up about them not saying she won't play past 27. Now look what she's doing. Energy. But can I just say, on the flip side, a 37-year-old Megan Rapinoe chasing her down until they took her off right at the end was something phenomenal to see at this stage of her career.
100%.
Right? Honestly, it was. I was so impressed by her and so impressed by that team. I think that the USA team will take a lot away from that.
They are still the team to beat at the World Cup, but that gap between them and the rest of the pack gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
That's what it is.
I think, you know, those last two first World Cup USA won in this run, I think they were maybe 50% better than everyone else. Last triumph in 2019, I'd say maybe 30%. Yeah. That game against France was the big there's the chasm.
And then the Olympics as well, with the way they kind of like stumbled it through. And did they lost to Canada, right?
Yeah. But now you're going, I mean, England can hurt them. Spain can hurt them if they're at full strength.
Yes.
France are always going to be there or thereabouts. The Netherlands on a good day as well.
And
it's getting spicy.
What stands out is, you know, we were mentioning off here like Redeem team, but they're now having to bed in a new generation of superstars. Yes. Alex Morgan wasn't there. A few big names weren't there. Similar to the England team in terms of, you know, White's not here anymore. Who wants to take the number nine shirt? Saw Lauren Hunt wear it. And it's like, okay, both are having new generations of superstars come in, and it's about who's going to be ready in time to make sure that that tournament down under is going to be their tournament. So it's really exciting. And that game, for me, was like, you know, it was a perfect picture of what we can expect.
Can I say something that I'm really excited about that I hope can happen, but it depends on how she gets on at Chelsea? If Lauren James, I can't see her as, she's not a number eight, but like, if she can get into that team alongside Kira Walsh and maybe Georgia Stanway, and she's, because, you know, they do Ella Toon, they try and, they might even do Ella Toon in there tonight. They do Frank Kirby in there as well. I love Lauren James to have a run in the team to see somebody else that, if somebody closes down on Kira Walsh, if somebody then stops Leah Williamson coming out, we're going to need something else somewhere. You know what I mean? And I think that that is where we need it, because at the moment, Frank Kirby's movement, brilliant. You know, Ella Toon comes on, we see what she could do, she's getting involved. But we need somebody who can just break a game up with skill and just bam. You know, but like, it's very, at the moment, before we end on it, the England women's team is very exciting. And I think that game was a big game for them mentally. Could you imagine what would have happened if they lost against USA, with USA kind of going through a bit of transitional period? If they beat England, the European champ, could you imagine the flex that they could have? They'd be tea drinking all over the place, bro. Because they say, you not just get all that, it's coming home, and then you come up against us, and then bam.
They would have crushed,
you know,
because
what they're saying at the moment, which I don't blame them for, is that goal was really, really tight. Because whoever's done that VAR for that run from Sophia Smith, and we have to mention her. We have to mention Trinity Rodman as well.
Yes,
Trinity.
Because I'm not joking.
Finish. Problem.
They've got once the USA get that player, even if it's a Kira Walshy kind of who controls the game, so as they can then wait on their runs, not just like blasting all the time. Yeah. They are going to completely feast. They're going to cook food. They're going to cook out.
Yeah,
it's a cookout. So you know what I mean. So I had to mention that. But like, you know, yeah, that's exciting. The World Cup. I'm looking forward to USA and England, see what happens in the World Cup. So that's cool. We'll see how it goes.
This episode is brought to you by UGG. Y'all know UGG is a brand that athletes wear all the time in the tunnel and on travel days. Well, I bet you think UGG season is only during the colder months of the year. Au contraire, you're wrong. You need to check out the latest spring drop from UGG. They have everything from sandals to clogs. I like the sandals. UGG has you covered for your next spring adventure. Shop the Golden Collection at UGG.com.
Miggy, can't you see? Sometimes your play just hypnotize me. That's what we should have said. We've got to give him flowers.
Yep.
Oh, and can we just roll back to Manchester City? Because there's certain things that are said in the dressing room that you know that, yeah, that's being said in dressing rooms. It's not supposed to fucking leave the dressing room. So when you hear Jack, who I love, Jack Grealish. I love Jack Grealish, don't get me wrong, but the man was properly oiled up on that procession.
Yep. Oiled up, I think that's fair to say. Yeah,
right. He's greased.
So for him to say, you know what I mean, he should have took Mahrez off because he's playing like Almiron, is easily one of the most disrespectful things I've heard forever. That's not supposed to be public consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So to see Miggy kind of like start this season,
you know, boom.
Boom, he's flying. He's flying, and I think you have to throw in Guimaraes, you've got to throw in Trippier, you've got to throw in the fact that he's got a team that's really going forward. They're 4-3-3 now. You know, you're looking at somebody who, his work rate has never been in question.
Yep.
End product, guys, is what it was all about. And confidence. That's probably why Jack gave him
for me, yeah. Confidence. And that self-belief of, I'm not getting left behind.
Because you know something, you know things are going to be changing there, man.
Listen, this is it. I remember, you know, last season, maybe season before that, you said, you know, when you're more confident, you have that little thing in your brain go, I don't need an extra touch.
Mm-hmm.
I can just go now. Mm-hmm. And some of the finishes Miggy's going for, he doesn't need that extra touch.
It's just instinct. It's like, I'm having fun again. And okay, I might miss that chance, but who bloody cares? I'm taking another one.
It's the useful thing of this Newcastle team. It's not the only chance you're going to get in a game.
Exactly.
And, you know, the previous manager and whatnot, you got maybe two chances, and every time you had to get that chance, you had to carry the ball 20, 30 yards, and you were isolated. It was you and one other person.
Yeah.
I've seen him now, playing right back before in that 5-4-1.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this Newcastle team, the quality of their press from the front, there are teams in the top six with managers saying, oh, well, it's hard to make a pressing system when you don't have a preseason. And you're looking at Newcastle going,
well, they've managed to do it.
A bit sticky.
Yeah.
Bit sticky.
Yeah, because they're so in sync. You know what I mean? They're so in sync with what they're doing. You know, I think that when you look at someone like Miggy now and the way he's playing, you could see what I love about him more than anything else is that when they get the ball, when they switch it quick enough and then it goes, and then the amount of times you see a player get the ball and he's facing up the defender and then he's kind of like, it goes like he does something and he stops and rolls it back. I saw that so many times in the Forest Village. But like, Miggy will get it and he'll shimmy, but you know he's coming inside. Mm-hmm. And he was so unlucky the other day. He came inside again, but his focus now is obvious to me that Howe has had that chat with him. Listen, we know you work. Your work rate is never in question. You need to add some end product because in games, he's shooting from everywhere now. He's doing it now. Mm. I'm so pleased for him. And this is why I believe he's going to get some flowers. He's got to get flowers.
100%. I just love the fact that with Eddie Howe, everyone's known that he's this sort of coach that, you know, gets his arm around you, says that, you know what, probably shows your spreadsheet. This is what you're doing well. This is what you could do better. I'm not getting into you. I just want you to improve.
Like,
Miggy's showing it completely with the shooting. Like the dinked finish, which I was like, oh my. So, I apologize. I wasn't familiar with the game. But even that, I'm looking at that Willock. Like, Willock's one of the most, like, evaded the most presses.
Yes.
Like, he's in the top five in the league. Wow. And it's like, Eddie Howe is getting the best out of his players individually. Therefore, as a team, they're improving. And you can see how happy they are for him because people would have probably thought, okay, when Isaac comes, this comes, you're finished. But he said, no. I came in here. I'm going to keep my shirt. And I think that it's just been infectious.
When you watch the game the other day, they're doing everything. They'll go diagonal. You know what I mean? They've got a set piece. The goal what they scored, the first goal they scored with Guimaraes' goal, was a set piece that was beautifully worked. It was beautifully worked. And they're doing everything. The way they pass it, Longstaff. You know, Longstaff is one of those, is a midfielder. To me, he's not afraid to get, he comes in that little hole in there and he'll pass through the lines. This is what you want to see. I'm tired of seeing it. I watched the game, like I say, yesterday, and people are afraid to pass. I'm going to have to go. I know we're doing like Amron and Flowers, but Stevie's got to get that team to start going forward. Are you not going to go to Nottingham Forest in the current climate and not completely go for them? You've got to go for them.
I find it
That's
weird.
What Newcastle are doing.
Bravery. It's
no risk, no reward.
Yeah. And I think there are... It's very difficult because a number of, you know, a lot of things plans want is keep the ball. That's one of the things you hear a lot in the stadium. Keep the effing ball. Yeah. But also, when you do keep the ball and pass it sideways, everyone goes, oh no, run it in. And it's that sort of, excuse me, like, do you want me to keep the ball? Do you want me to run it in?
Exactly.
And it's that risk reward. And you're seeing this argument about risk reward on so many levels up and down the pyramid. And I think this Newcastle team have... I mean, the relative risk of doing stuff is not really there because they can finish as high as they want.
And plus as well, Carl, you can't ignore the fact that those fans, whatever they do in that stadium at the moment, those fans are going to get behind them.
Listen, you see Newcastle, right? it's like, you know that tune? Dun, 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 dun. Before the game, it's like, you're just gassed. Yeah. You're like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, they're just, it's infectious. But on the no risk, no reward thing, the reason why it's so sweet is because even if it's a risk, they're going to go and win the ball back anyway. It's like, oh, we messed up. Playing, we're going to get it back.
This is true.
That they are fully about it. There's most teams, when they lose the ball, like, oh my gosh, it's one pass. Our defense is split up. We're going to concede. Newcastle are like, no, that's not a problem. Mm. We'll get the ball back. Yeah, so I think that's the beauty of it, that they've got this fine balance. And I guess now, when you've got players like Bruno, he's the original Bruno league now. The other guy in Manchester, he's Fernandes. He's not Bruno.
Fernandes.
When when you've got ballers like Bruno there, you've got Willock doing what he's doing. You've got people at the back. You've got a goalkeeper that's keeping clean sheets. Mm-hmm. I think he's third in the league now with clean sheets. Mm-hmm. You just have this confidence that you can go anywhere and you get results.
Give somebody a game. And they've gone to a level where, like I said, the fans now are not bothered, because the one thing that you can always say about Newcastle fans, and this is why it was always so unfair for people to say to them, well, what did they expect? What did they expect at Newcastle? You know what I mean? A mid-table team, listen, Newcastle fans only want their team to have a go. Have a go, because then what that does, it just galvanizes the old stadium. All of a sudden, you as a player just feel the energy, and that is what Newcastle do. You know what I mean? So I'm pleased that Eddie Howe's recognized it and they are doing it, man. God willing, Callum Wilson stays fit. Isak comes back and he kicks in. And because you're looking at Newcastle side now that people will fear, especially when you go there. If you have to go there and get something, you're probably going to be, probably come unstuck.
Yeah.
When Newcastle, someone asked me yesterday, can they break into the top six? I think that there's still a couple of players away from being consistent enough to stay in the top six. And staying there to get in there. But like, we'll have to see how they do this season.
I mean, Newcastle couldn't have a cup run.
Yeah.
Which...
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You're saying, oh my gosh. Think about how many years under the previous... under Mike Ashley, where Newcastle just didn't do anything in the cups.
Mm.
Whereas now they have a team and a collective vision that goes, yeah, maybe we can try and get to the FA Cup fourth round. Obviously, you know. It'd be remiss of us to say the reason they can do this is because of where the finances are coming from, whatnot. But Eddie Howe is good at the things Eddie Howe is good at. And what that has built is a very good, not just the starting 11, but a 15, 16 and players in some of the best form I've seen those players in a while.
And that's why now we're seeing, that's why Miggy's on here getting flowers, because 100%. I think that alongside Guimaraes, obviously Trippier's a great signing. You know, Longstaff is somebody I'm very excited about. Joe Willock, you know, seeing Joe Willock go there and under the radar, just he gets in that box, man. He, like you mentioned,
crashes
with the stat.
The box.
You know what I mean? I'm glad to see a man like him and Iwobinho doing their thing. I'm just so
pray
pleased.
For times like this.
Scoring that goal in front of his uncle as well. Uncle's there? All right, cool. No,
oh my goodness.
Iwobinho's got to get mentioned. But hey, this is Miggy's time. So Miggy.
100%.
Can I give small flowers to the Brentford fans? Train strikes. Brentford in London, got to get up to St James's Park. That's what, best part of 4-6 hours.
Wow.
You know, Jay Harris at The Athletic did a story about how he's talked to Brentford fans. Some of them were catching flights, big buses, carpools, all that stuff.
Carpools
to get all the way up to Newcastle. And then, you know, Brentford didn't really play well. It's one of those things of, on the TV broadcast, oh, that's quite nice. But you remember that away support from Brentford.
Love for that. Yeah. Nice one.
They
Carl.
Did the long journey.
Yeah. You can't even see the game in that away stand. It's so high. It's so high.
Nosebleeds. It's true. Nosebleeds. Yeah. Phone signal up there is a... I haven't done anything on phone signal in St. James's Park for a while.
They're closer to satellites than they are to the actual football pitch. Brentford fans, flowers too.
Small flowers to Brentford fans.
Miggy and Brentford fans, flowers.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from sports exploration and green energy to delivering pizza and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 200, or 2 billion, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid, featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God. The world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates.
So Carlos, my brother, Man United, because obviously I'm so hedonistic. It's everything so hedonistic with me at the moment because my team's top of the league and, and I'm looking down. But as I'm looking down, I'm not hearing no noise from United at the moment, Carl. It's like everything, apart from like Ronaldo, everything I'm hearing at it is, well, why didn't Ronaldo play? Oh, Ronaldo came on and scored. What's happening? Is that happening in Manchester? What's happening in Manchester, Carl? Because something's happening.
No, so the noise about Ronaldo isn't, not really on the ground in Manchester. So,
what? So the fans, not fussed?
I mean, if I'm going through the comment section, I'm in the Q&As, I'm talking to fans, they're not clamoring for Ronaldo to start. A lot of the questions are, when is Martial going to be fit?
Mm-hmm.
There is a recognition that what Ten Hag wants to do, the best person to lead the line is Anthony Martial, and unfortunately, he's not. I mean, credit to Martial from getting from bad form to a point where United fans now go, I need this guy back.
Yeah. Martial FC stocks are booming once
again. Booming! I was going through my bin, going through the shredder, like sellotaping it back up, my Martial FC card, man. Lie to me again. I'm ready. And then with Ronaldo, you know, well done getting club goal 700. But club goal 700, I think a lot of fans expected that to happen a lot earlier. There's been a number of games or a number of cameo appearances, Ronaldo, where I'm pausing here because I'm trying to find the right words for it. It's been mildly concerning. So one of the first big moments was Manchester United against Southampton, late August. You know, Ronaldo comes on, partway through the second half, runs clear, and then Mohamed Salisu makes a 30-yard run, catches up with him, tackles him. And that was their first big, like, that's weird. That doesn't normally happen. Right on the right before full time against Southampton as well, Ronaldo's got, you know, maybe a 2-on-1, and Rashford's on his outside. Ronaldo's running, and then he sort of isn't quite running, which is that weird thing of, are you slowing down because you want to play in Rashford, or are you going for the goal? And it's Cristiano Ronaldo.
He's going
for the goal. Yeah. And then Bella Kotchap makes a 25-yard run, catches him up. So ever since then, I've gone, defenders seem to be able to catch him. Yeah. And I've seen him against Real Sociedad. He had a number of, gets the first touch, is about to turn to get the second touch and shoot. And that shot isn't coming.
Mm-hmm.
He's not getting the shots off at the speed he used to. Defenders are able to get in front of him more now. Because he's still Ronaldo, he's always going to get into the good positions. Mm. You don't score 700 club goals without knowing where and how to run. And I think the goal he got against Everton is a proper, he's hiding in that space between the centre-back and the fullback. And the moment Casemiro's there, he's like, bam. Now, Casemiro knows immediately where Ronaldo's doing, and he's in there. And he gets there, and he gets the shot. I'm watching the replay, and I went, who's the centre-back? And, oh, it's Connor Cody.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking,
okay, I get it.
I mean, no disrespect to Connor Cody. I think if Connor Cody was maybe 3 years younger, he might have got there in time. And I think this is the big balancing act about the striking thing. I think there's a number of players at Manchester United now who are known quantities. And now it's up to Ten Hag to go, I know what you're good at. I now need to find a way to make this team create more opportunities so you can just do that.
Can I say about what the confusion with not playing Casemiro? I was because he's coming here with all the credentials. Man does not need no bedding in period. Right, what's that about?
Because I saw the sort of perfect picture in the Everton game. So the first goal comes from, and you know, this guy has done everything in football, but this is the Barclays Premier League. And you're not playing like Joaquim or all of these guys in Spain. Onana doesn't care. Onana doesn't care. He's going to kick you and he's going to keep punching you up. And I think that ultimately in that game, this game, because this is his first start, right?
First start, perhaps.
I think it finally clicked to him that, you know what? No one's going to pay me the respect of giving me 5 yards on the ball.
You cannot use the referee as a bodyguard.
You cannot. You are the bodyguard.
Do you ever get that? Sometimes you can see it, when a Premier League team goes to the Champions League, they like a midfielder will do a foul and the referee will blow. And you can see the midfielder like, why
are you blowing for?
Why are you giving me a yellow card? And the referee's like, no, this is Champions League. You can't do that. And then you have the reverse of sometimes a player will play in the Premier League and then maybe the first foul, they'll go down and look at the referee and the referee's going, no,
that's fine, that's cool.
I mean, Casemiro, even at Real Madrid, if you asked him to be the progressive passer and to do that sort of stuff in the half turn, he would have some problems. So I'm not going to say the Premier League is super unique, but I will say that's a thing that he's vulnerable to.
Mm.
I think the reason why he's only just making a start now, one, and this sounds really weird, Scott McTominay's tall. And if you look at that United team, there's not many six-footers anymore.
Mm.
That starting 11 doesn't have many six-footers, and there becomes a point where you just need a six-foot someone guy on set pieces. And I think McTominay had that slight advantage, and then he maximised that by playing the best I've seen him play in a while.
Right.
It was always a case of when rather than if with Casemiro. And I think, you know, the game on Thursday, and I mean, McTominay now is suspended. I think Casemiro will be now the person next to Christian Eriksen. This Man United team, you know, like you said, I'm not hearing any noise. Mm. It's that bit in the Hollywood film where you go, you hear that? And you go, no.
No, I can't hear
I can't. And he goes, exactly. That is Man United right now. Like the big one, and I keep saying the big secret mission for Manchester United this season is for Erik ten Hag to just be like, you hear that?
Exactly.
And you're like, what? And he goes, no one's mentioned Pochettino's name. Mm. That's the big thing. If every Man United fan can go the entire season without going, wish we got Pochettino instead. Yeah. Then Ten Hag has won.
So they're seeing it. The fans are seeing it because, like you say, you're on the comment section and what you're hearing. They're seeing something because I think that's a good thing.
I wouldn't say I like
him when he's in
all in, but I'm seeing an appreciation that this is going to take time. You know, Ten Hag keeps using the word process now. He keeps talking about high demands and the standards, and he's talking about how you can't just do it in your 90 minutes on the weekend. I want to see it on the training ground. I need to see this. I need to see that. He was asked after the Europa League game about Donny van de Beek.
Mm-hmm.
The question was very much like, isn't Donny your boy? Mm-hmm. And he goes, what does Donny need to... Donny's your boy. What does Donny need to do to come back? And he's got to be available.
Mm.
Just, he's not fit right now. He needs to be available. And he needs to show me that he can do what I need him to do now.
Right.
Not based on previous stuff.
Yeah.
And I think he is... The first couple of weeks after those defeats, Ten Hag seemed a bit on rickety ground. Those comparisons to Frank de Boer already. And then that four-game run just gave him that credit of just going, whatever we're doing, we're going to do it my way.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the City game helped as well? Because, you know, when there's like derby games, people are like, you know, yeah, four games, we can do them. And then it was just sort of like a humbling and he can go, listen, there are different levels here. But for the level we're trying to be right now, we are on track. And you guys need to remember that we're not here. We're not the super team. Yeah. I think it just brought the fans. Fans probably went, oh, okay, you know what? We're doing all right. We can't be City at the moment. No. Do you reckon there's that balance out there?
So losing to City
is always going to hurt.
It's always going to hurt if you're a Manchester United fan. There's going to be more than one team this season that loses to City. There's going to be more than one team that concedes six goals against Man City.
Yeah.
And I think that derby defeat happens because the plan Ten Hag has was a little bit naive and then the execution of it was quite poor.
Mm.
And I think that's why Ten Hag sounded so angry on TV afterwards. He's like, this is just nonsense. Mm. And then later on he went, okay, maybe the standards and the levels wasn't quite where I want. And I think he's very good at, one, he plays his cards very close to his chest. You ask him, what do you want to win this season? He just goes, I want to win every game. He's not going to tell if he wants the Europa League. He's not going to tell if he wants top four. It's not that. And he's getting good at getting United fans to understand this will take time.
Mm.
And providing he doesn't have too many 4-0 at half times, I think United will be, and the United environment will be okay. I think the Cristiano Ronaldo situation will be rumbling and it will flare up every now and again. I think the captaincy thing will flare up every now and again. But the rest of it should be okay. And also, you know, when there are problems, I think one thing that's good on Ten Hag is when there are problems, you can see how Ten Hag would fix it quite quickly.
Yeah.
So they didn't play well against City and you go, okay, well, maybe let's bring in Luke Shaw and that might help Jadon Sancho. Yeah. That sort of thing.
You know what? What I would say before we finish is that in respect of Ten Hag and what he done for Ronaldo and the respecting the legacy of him by not bringing, I feel that there's something in that card that I found very magnanimous and respectful from Ten Hag, because
no one can understand, probably apart from Ten Hag sitting there, like you're sitting there with one of, arguably one of the greatest players that's ever played. His numbers are there for everyone to see. And your team's losing 4-0. You know that everybody's, the cameras are on, I mean, everything. And you are thinking, I don't want to embarrass him.
I mean,
bringing him on at 4-0. We're not talking about prime Ronaldo. We're talking about an aging Ronaldo that at 4-0, is he really? We saw him come on against, we saw him against Everton. He came, he scored a goal. Brilliant. Yeah, but 4-0 against Manchester City, it was the best thing to do. He done the right thing for him.
I think,
I love that.
It's the interesting thing is two separate things that happened that are being lumped together. It's not just that he didn't play Ronaldo. It's he played Anthony Martial and Martial scores two goals. Mm. So you could ask him, Ten Hag, why didn't you play Ronaldo? And he could have said, well, I played the best number nine for what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I think United fans now understand the best number nine for what United need to do this season is making sure Martial's fit.
Yeah.
And that's the big...
There's a bigger conversation there as well. And ultimately, the world of football management is such a difficult job because it's not just about, you know, performance on the pitch. It's about camaraderie. It's about the feeling and trust. And you know better than anyone. And ultimately, when you've got someone like that, that is a legend that transcends the football club, football.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it when he came back and how all of the players spoke about him, all the pictures that were posted up. His influence is so much outside of the club. So imagine what it's like within those walls.
Mm.
He's having to manage that and manage a team that he knows isn't where the fans think it should be. So right now, I think he's doing really well with this balancing job because I've not seen that Ronaldo interview come out. I've not seen Ronaldo come out and say anything. Mm-hmm. I've seen Ronaldo get goal 700 and seem all right on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting part now is in October, you have fixtures twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to play 10 games and Martial is unfit. How do you operate your squad? Because Ronaldo's going to have to play games.
Mm.
That's the bottom line. Eriksen cannot play 90 minutes every single game.
Yep.
So something's going to have to happen there. Lindelof has come back into the fold, which, you know, seems to be all right, but he's going to have to balance this squad really, really well. And I think it's going to be the toughest month that he has this season. How he navigates that would determine what United can do this season for me.
I agree. It's the thing of, you know, it's three more Europa League games. United, low-key, really need to top that group because they couldn't fulfill two Premier League fixtures. And the best time to fill those two Premier League fixtures is when you top that group and you don't have to play in the playoff against the Champions League dropout.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these, there's loads of, you know, secret missions. He's got to make sure no one thinks about Pochettino. He's got to manage the captaincy situation properly. He's got to make sure Dalot stays fit because the right back situation is a bit sticky. He's got to make sure Bruno can actually retain the ball during those times when Christian Eriksen isn't doing well. Mm-hmm. He's got to make sure, okay, if Ronaldo isn't going to be starting and Martial is currently injured, then your best number nine option is Marcus Rashford. Yes. So then you've also got to go, how do I make sure Marcus Rashford is a good number nine? Which means you've got to play a bit higher up the field, win the ball up, and then cause those sort of counter-attack transitional
moves. Yeah, Arsenal, like we saw Arsenal.
And it's that sort of, he's constantly having to tweak all the time in a new league where certain things are going on. One thing I always find interesting is when people say, you've got to back the manager. And for me, backing the manager is more than just giving someone loads of money.
100%.
Right? We all talk all the time, even when we're not doing podcast stuff, and we back each other, not just by saying you're doing great, but also sometimes I'll come tomorrow, I'll come to you and I'll say, here's my plan.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something I don't see?
Yes.
Mm. Right? Here's what I think football is going on, Ian. Is there something that you, as a former professional football player who's won a Premier League, is there like something about a striker's mentality I'm not understanding? Mm-hmm. And that's how you back me by going, you've made a mistake here because I have more knowledge here.
Mm.
And I think United need to get more people around Ten Hag to go,
yes, bro.
Yo.
Yes.
Newcastle are now a problem.
Nice. That's true.
Nice. Newcastle are. But just before we go, move on from this, I'm always happier when the Man United, Liverpool's, Arsenal, even Tottenham, not so much Tottenham, and that's not disrespectful, are playing well. The league and everything, the fans, everything.
Where was Chelsea?
Is better. Sorry, Mayowa. That's what it was. Chelsea. Them four teams, right? And no matter how much the rivalry and that, when them four teams are playing and are on it, the league is a different level because you know, I haven't mentioned Man City because they're somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
These lot are trying to catch them. City are going, okay, so who's next? Oh, Arsenal. All right, then. We'll beat this team. Let's see what you do. Okay, you're going to beat Liverpool? Okay, well, this is where we find out about the mentality of Arsenal, and this is where we're going to learn so much about this team, and this team's going to learn so much about what it's like having to be elite. And that is what's exciting at the
Should
moment.
Should we get into it? Should we get into that game?
Passion, 3-2? Energy, clarity, man.
Just quickly, because we want to talk about, ideally, those young players. We want to talk about Martinelli.
Baller.
Saka.
Baller.
Saliba.
Baller.
Bala.
Good sensation.
And the way they played. And what they had to do to win that game. And even though I thought, yes, everybody says how soft the penalty was. It was soft. But that will happen again and that will happen for them, I'm sure, at some stage in the season. But the way Arsenal went about that game and the way Martinelli, in the end, I know Trent done his ankle, but in the end, they took off. And remember, we had Tomiyasu playing left back. They took off Salah, they took off Matip, and they took off Trent. Yeah, Trent done his ankle. But Martinelli was doing the work of two men because remember, Tomiyasu weren't even coming and getting around him. Mm. And he was blazing up that right side.
Do you know something that stands out for me? Yeah, I've got a good friend, Cameron, Culture Cams. And he said something. He said, when it's sunny at the Emirates, you don't want the smoke.
And it's true.
I've been watching closely. And
when it's sunny, bro.
The moment that just painted everything perfectly. Diaz is running. Martinelli's running.
Oh,
and as he's running, I'm just saying, woof, 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 woof. Just running. And then the fans are jumping. And I said, you know what? This isn't a gimmick. This isn't a joke. Brace yourselves. We are in the Arteta era.
Yeah, we're
like,
in it.
It's real.
We're smack banging it now. We're at the start and like just changing gears, bro. We're getting into that fast lane.
I think before the season started, a lot of people are, you know, who's going to finish top four? Who's going to do this? And I think quite a few observers, commenters, pundits were going, you know, Arsenal, first team's really good, but the big test would be if there's missing two or three players.
Mm-hmm.
I've now reached that point of going, what happens if this team gets better?
Mm-hmm.
What if this isn't a team playing at their maximum and we see how long they can maintain their maximum? Mm-hmm. What if this is a team at, say, stage 80% and have another 20% to go? Because Martinelli is... I remember Arteta talking about how the big thing with Martinelli is he had to teach him gears.
Yes.
That when he first came in, he was running 100 miles an hour all the time, would be knackered off the hour mark and just burn himself out. Whereas now I'm seeing...
And he's chopping down a gear.
You can go, okay, third gear for a little bit. All right, they're going to do this. They're going to, you know, recycle the ball. I can do a little bit more. That's amazing. I mean, Saka, I mean, when they came to Old Trafford, Man United won. But one thing that really stuck my mind about Saka was he was... doing dirty work.
Yeah.
He was grafting. He was giving Malassia the business. And I went, when did Saka learn that? When did he download this fouling package? They're good.
You know, the thing is I think what's happened with Martinelli as well. I remember when we had done the interview with him, when we went to the Adidas place and his dad said that you've got to target the 2022 World Cup. That's the kind of levels that this man's been on from the age of like 10, 11. His dad's saying that's what you've got to target. I think that's going to be tough for him simply because the two teams that he's just played and played arguably two of his best games I've seen him is Tottenham, Richarlison, and Liverpool, Firmino. Now, those three are probably in the running. I think probably one of them might go. If he carries on how he's playing, I think he'll have a good chance of being in it because even if he does go to Brazil, to the World Cup, I'm not sure he's going to play too frequently. But you get the impression...
Heck of a player to get off the bench.
Honestly, to come off the bench.
Half an hour in a quarter final. Here you go.
Once he realised, right? Because remember, he was duking it out at one stage with Emile Smith Rowe. That's kind of gone now. That's gone. He's the guy now. But once Pepe's gone, Aubameyang's gone, and he's like been given it, and like you say, he knows about his gears now. He's in fact, he's got automatic gearbox now. He knows it drops down. So now I believe it's literally up to him how he progresses through this season with the consistency, whether he gets in that squad or not. But the one of the big problems is Saliba and Saka in respect of their contract. We got to start thinking about signing. I think it'd be easier to sign a Martinelli down to a contract because he's World Cup won't have any bearing on how he's playing and what he's doing. But like Saka and Saliba could say, you know something? I'm not going to do the Harry Kane, bro. I'm not going to sign before the World Cup. I'm gonna wait. Mm-hmm. You can't blame them for that.
Yeah.
You can't blame them for that. But for me, Martinelli, if I'm Arsenal, I'm going in. I think he's got an extension that they can just activate. Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm going in now before it, and I'm offering him whatever he wants.
You know,
right now.
The issue, right, is ultimately I respect, you know, you've got the top passion, energy, clarity. I respect everything that Arteta has built at Arsenal, and the issue with it is that it's almost like having a year seven group for the first few weeks at school. Everyone's trying to find their place, mm-hmm, and everything. Mm-hmm. And then, you know what? Pupil of the month has been who got the contract first, Eddie Nketiah or Dagon, number 14, 100K. Mm-hmm. What it's rumored, anything. Mm-hmm. Great. What's happened now is everyone's raised their level to a place, looking at their table and gone, well, if we're all on parity and we're talking about effort and getting back, then what am I really worth? And because camaraderie is such a big thing, it's like, okay, I have to make sure I don't upset the boat with anything, mm-hmm, here. Mm-hmm. Saliba had to go out to the wilderness.
Yes. 40 days, bro.
40 nights. And he's like, listen, look at what I'm doing. Look what I've done to your team. I need this. Saka, we know what happened last year. Look at what I've done. Martinelli's in his moment now. Yes. Look at what I've done. So it's like, do you do something where everyone's in equal parity? And it's like, you know what? You're all getting the same thing. Does that work? Or that's the difficulty they've got. And like you've mentioned, the other two can use the World Cup as leverage. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's one of those things where you do it that basketball, listen, you get this much, you'll get the same one. We do the team picture, everyone signs.
Yeah,
what Wenger did with the
Wenger
English
with the English court, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You do it again. I'd see this is free marketing. Arteta's court, got all of them standing with the t-shirts. Yeah, we've signed to 2026.
That's amazing. So he's not even so much the money. I think it's
the duration.
The
exactly.
So if you look at Liverpool's contract extensions for Trent and Salah and Virgil van Dijk, they all are in and around 2024, 2026.
Yeah.
Mm. And that was very much, this is how long our window is going to last.
Exactly.
And this
is
when we build our next one.
Yeah.
And I think for Arsenal now, these players now look, they're going to be playing Champions League football next season.
Yeah.
It looks like. So then you go, well, how many years are these boys going to be playing Champions League football? Yeah. And you pick a date of when they're all going to be reaching their quote unquote peak. And you say, that's when that contract is, 2024, 2026.
Yeah.
Then go again after that, whatever tournament's coming up next.
Yeah. And you have to remember, if you look at where Liverpool are and right, the conversation with Liverpool, football is very cyclical, right? That City-Liverpool sort of battle was a 4-5 year season stretch.
Yep.
The benefit that Arsenal have is that they have a super young team. Mm. Super, super young team. So if you're planning your 5-year stretch of we're going to try and compete at the top and have everything in, your contracts have to fall in line with that. But you have to be careful that your contracts don't end when they go into the peak, because Gabriel's, 24?
Yeah.
Saka's just turned 21. Mm-hmm. Saliba,
21.
21. Mm-hmm. So if you were to do 4-year contracts, 26,
man,
right, see you.
Man's still flying.
So you've got to make sure that you put enough there, but you put in the stipulation that you can then extend. But they're in a situation where I said it recently, if they look at any team in the league, apart from City, and I know they lost to United, they would think, you know what, we can go and slap everyone. Yeah. We are in that sort of form.
In that mode.
If you carry that on for the whole season, you know, add a few signings in January, because you'd never know what can happen in the Premier League. We don't know if City players are going to get injured. We know that Haaland's going to be in a hyperbolic chamber. But we don't know who's going to get injured in at the World Cup. We don't know who's going to come back and have a rocky start. How far can Arsenal push this at the moment?
Yeah.
How can they improve? And then you go into next season saying, you know what, we can actually do something. That's what Liverpool did. When Liverpool were competing, they went from wilderness to, oh, we're close.
We're right in it.
Let's push it again. So it's a real unique opportunity, and I just don't want this Arsenal team to be in a situation where they've got young players, they've got ability. As Carl said, they're operating at 70% that they don't capitalise on the now. Just get those contracts signed, keep the feeling going, get more players, and just really go for it. Because when are you going to get this opportunity again? Yeah.
And Mikel's being very, he's just very calm on the whole thing. It's unbelievable to watch, you know. And like, when he came, everyone said, he's a coach. What Arsenal doing? He's a coach. He hasn't even managed. But when you look at a man moves and how he's moving, what he says, how he is, what he had to come in and do at Arsenal to get them to where they are now is unbelievable. You have to mention Edu. You have to mention Per Mertesacker. Mm. You have to mention Vinay. They've been together doing what they're doing, but Arsenal are now ready to launch.
Yeah.
Right? And I know for a man is taking each game as it comes. The fact that we're still at the top, everybody said, yeah, well, it's just a matter of time. Fine. It's fine.
They said the same thing about Leicester.
In fact, exactly. But the thing is, you said that. You didn't want me to say that.
You said that.
The main thing is that the top four was the goal, right? Top four was the goal. So if they get that, then that's what you're talking about. Because all of a sudden, guys, we're talking about a different level and caliber of player who's on the outside looking in at Arsenal, young team, unbelievable stadium, unbelievable vibe in the place. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's the player you're starting to attract now. Because you look at Liverpool, and of course, Liverpool are what Liverpool are. You know, they're going through the transition, but Arsenal have now forced themselves in a position where they can vie with somebody who might be going to Liverpool.
I'll put it this way. So, City, we know in quantity, know what they're going to do, know how good they're going to be. Chelsea, new manager, I have no idea how much money they have to spend. I think they're going to spend a bit of money, but in transition.
Mm.
Manchester United, start of a new project. Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
Tottenham Hotspur, kind of look like the finished product, but also aren't really... Right. So there's a lot of top six teams right now where you're going,
Arsenal go,
And that probably means a lot. I think the interesting thing now is we talk about football being cyclical and whatnot. This new cycle is going to be amazing. So strange.
Yeah.
Winter World Cup. Winter World Cup, Swiss format Champions League, Euros, they're moving AFCON up and down and left and right and whatnot. Like, there are so many things that are very hard to get confirmed and written in stone that if you're a football player now in your 20s, I think you want to know for sure, I am at a team that's going to be this good for the next 3 or 4 years while I sort out, am I going to be in the Euros? Am I going to be playing this weird Champions League format where I play an extra 10 games a season? Is there still going to be 5 substitutes? Are we going back down to 3? Right? You want your bread and butter to know who your manager is and to know what the aims are. And I think at the moment, man, it's painful to say, Arsenal have a very compelling project.
Nice. It is. And that is what I'm very excited about. It's a compelling project. And at the moment, somebody's got to try and hang on to fucking City, bro. Jesus Christ. So, guys, that's it. Thank you very much for coming to the house. Carl, it's great to see you back in the yard, bro. Great to see you back in the yard. Mayowa, Badri, thanks. Thanks for coming today. But thanks to last week as well with the FB being a Gillette man. Thanks for everything. Thanks for listening, everybody. You know, at the moment, I'm very happy. My team's top of the league.
I'm very filled.
And I'm going to say this at the ending until we're not top of the league. But thanks for listening, guys. And, you know, Arsenal fans, rejoice. Everybody else, come catch us, baby!